My immediate response, of course, and my immediate reaction is that this is very horrible. And every time something of this nature happens, we make it a point to issue a press statement of condemnation. Unfortunately, this rape of a four-year-old is not a standalone case. We have actually seen quite a few cases in the recent past.
And why would that be?
Well, I mean, there can be many reasons. I don't know why people do things like this. We have also seen a gang rape of a 12-year-old and another rape of a 9-year-old in recent months. There have been similar cases. But one thing is very, very clear is that we have to have legislation in place to make sure that perpetrators can be sentenced accordingly, so that can act as a deterrent for others to do things like this.
And so the UN Population Fund, UNFPA, has been lobbying and asking the government to put in place this law that's pending adoption by Parliament, the Sexual Offences Bill. What's the UN's role been in promoting this bill? And is there anything else like it in the country, or is really the issue of sexual offences just something that is swept under the carpet?
So generally, yes, it is seen as a very personal issue that is not any business of the federal or the state government. I do think in a case like this where you have a child who has been hurt, and for sure there is a perpetrator, an alleged perpetrator who has been detained for further investigation. And I do think that in this case, something will happen and there will be some sort of a sentence. But generally speaking, when we talk about the Sexual Offences Bill, it's also much broader because it includes issues around marital rape and other issues which are seen as not being a sexual offence. And that is perhaps one of the reasons that it hasn't been able to pass in Parliament. But in general, UNFPA is pushing with other UN agencies and civil society to have legislation passed in this regard.
Do you think that the COVID-19 pandemic is having an increased impact on gender-based violence in Somalia?
Undoubtedly, undoubtedly. It's very, very clear that people are going through a tremendous amount of hardship, mostly economic hardship, because all ports have been closed, remittances from abroad are not coming, the export of livestock have been halted. A lot of shops have been shut down. So people are really going through hardship. We know when populations go through hardship, they lose their income. Stress increases, and women often are the ones who pay the price through violence.
So what does UNFPA do? What are your priorities, and how do they tally with those of the people and those of the Somali government?
So, I mean, we haven't really changed our program. We are making the same efforts with gender-based violence centers, reaching out to IDP populations, making sure that we have a strong advocacy agenda against FGM, female genital mutilation, and that all of these activities continue unhindered during this time.
There's also many reports from UN humanitarians and partner agencies about the possible threat of floods, and indeed the immediate and real threat of floods, in addition to desert locusts, which seem to be rampaging across vast swathes of East Africa and the Horn of Africa. Is that the case in Somalia too?
Absolutely. We have locusts. We have very severe floods in several different parts of the country. And of course, that is something that is dominating the agenda, because it's leading to food insecurity, which is, of course, a big, big issue. And of course, there is a tremendous pressure on the health system because of COVID-19. Unfortunately, because of all these competing priorities, we do see that the international community is not paying enough attention, in our opinion, to gender-based violence and FGM, which is still running rampant in this situation.
If there were one thing, Mr. Thompson, you represent the UNFPA, the UN Population Fund in Somalia, maybe you could say what your personal experience of the country has been and perhaps how that has changed or not since COVID, the emergency began.
I mean, in general, Somalia is a wonderful country and it's really wonderful to work here in Somalia. Everyone is very proud to contribute to a better future for everybody. And you have that energy, people coming back from the diaspora wanting to rebuild their country. But having said that, The country is still fragile. It's a fragile democracy. And when you see external factors like economic pressure and COVID coming here, you do see the cracks starting to form. And it's just a reminder that it is a country that still needs the help of the international community for time to come.
Yes, we didn't even talk about the separatists, the attacks that happened on an alarmingly frequent and horrific scale. Is it something you put to the back of your mind, so to speak, or how do you deal with specific security threats?
So absolutely, there's no question about the fact that the presence of Al-Shabaab makes the work difficult for all of us, because there are many areas where there are vulnerable populations that we simply cannot access. And at the same time, when there are weaknesses in the national security forces or in the control of Mogadishu, for example, that actors like Al-Shabaab, they see now this as an opportunity to gain territory. And that makes the work for all of us, all humanitarians, much more complicated.